Hello, Bulls fans. Welcome to a long overdue episode of the Chicago Bullseye. I am your host, Mark Lewenthal. With me, as always, is Fred Pfeiffer. I thank you, Fred. I mean, the reason we spend so long, and obviously we've had so much going on this offseason, we actually taped the show right before everything went down with Carmelo Anthony, with him re-signing with the Knicks. So we had a very heated debate, but we had some issues with our feed. And God bless you, Fred, man. I know you've had you've been under the weather. You've had some surgery. And you fixed everything with our feed, so we're able to do the show again. But for a period of time there, the Chicago Bullseye was in doubt. And unfortunately, it happened at a time when there was quite a bit to talk about. So thank you so much, Fred, for getting the show back up and running again.
Mark, thanks for you for being patient. I apologize. I mean, basically, we were blindsided with GoDaddy closing down our blogcast. And you know, so we've just been scrambling. We're putting up the ChicagoBullseye.com. And hopefully it's going to be, you know, a pretty cool site that you all enjoy. Just as a side note, I had a tonsillectomy about, 9 days ago, and it still hurts intensely, so I'm going to limit my words, because every word I speak, it still hurts. It's unbelievable. I don't encourage anybody to get a tonsillectomy at 40. It's just a horrific thing. So, but that said, enough with my, dire condition.
That's a really creative way. I mean, that's a very dramatic way of saying you had your tonsils removed, right?
Yeah, exactly. I had my tonsils removed, my nose fixed, basically. I had a deviated septum. Now I kind of look like Ricardo Montalban. I'm a better, more improved version, but it's going to take a few days before I'm 100%. That said, I'm going to play hurt, Mark, because you know why? It's big time right now.
Big time. Can I take everybody back real quickly because I think what happened with our last show, the one that actually didn't go up, we had an extreme – just to give a little bit of backstory, we had a really extremely heated debate on the Carmelo Anthony situation, with Fred saying, obviously that he was right. I mean, you were right, Fred. You thought that Carmelo was going to take the money. I was given reasons why I thought that he would potentially want to play here. I mean, we were yelling and screaming. It was classic Bullseye. You did get taken out. The reason I'm not going to post it is because we didn't finish it. You got cut out because you had some family stuff to attend to. We were going to finish it up, but we started having issues with the show, so we didn't do the ending to it. But it was a really good show. But now, here we sit here on the 23rd of July, and the team is completely different. We've signed Pau Gasol. We were debating on that show the merits of Pau Gasol. I, at the time, not in favor to the extent – I like Pau Gasol as a player. I still stand on the fact that, especially now that Nikola Mirotic is here, we are extremely deep at the power forward spot right now, extremely deep. And we are still relatively shallow at our wing spots. That's my general thought, though. I do love Pau Gasol as a player. And I do think that our team is dramatically improved right now. I mean, since our last show, Nikola Mirotic has signed with the team. Pau Gasol has signed with the team. We got Aaron Brooks. We got Kirk Heinrich back again. We'll talk about that. Yeah. The team is obviously a lot deeper than it was just a little bit ago. Where do you stand right now, Fred, with before we get into all this Kevin Love talk, where do you stand right now with your thoughts on the Bulls as we stand today?
I'm ecstatic. I really am. You know, first of all, Mark, our argument that we had about Melo was – my point was that in the column of why stay with the Knicks, there was more than just money. You made it sound like there was no possible reason for him to leave New York outside of the money if he really wanted to win. I kind of believe in Phil Jackson. I think he's going to do a good job there. I think, they have a proven organization that's willing to spend money no matter what, go into the luxury tax. They have a rabid fan base. There's a lot of good things about New York, and I understand why he stayed. No hard feelings. I don't think the money was close enough. I don't blame him at all for taking the money. If it was maybe like $5 million a year, it was a lot more insignificant dollars, I would have been, whatever, this guy's not really about it. But you can't turn that down. It's just too much of a difference to turn down. And also,
Tell that to Dirk Nowitzki.
Well, my basic point, though, Mark, was that you're tying yourself to Derrick Rose still. It's not like a guaranteed sure thing. I mean, if Derrick isn't what he was, I don't think Carmelo wins a title in Chicago and ends up being a horrible thing, right? If we're going to win a title, I think you would agree, Derrick needs to be like 90% of what he was, somewhere around there, somewhere approaching what he was. And not constantly injured, not constantly on the IR. Would you concur with that?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I think that with the way that things went, because we went through free agency and we just added to the depth of this team could be very good regardless of Derrick Rose.
Oh, agreed.
Now, if you got Carmelo Anthony, the pieces that you probably would have had to trade would have taken away the depth that we now currently have. Yes, you are banking on Derrick Rose being really, really good. Now, Melo and Joakim Noah alone would have been a tremendous combination. But right now, yeah, I mean, there's certainly a big element that is banking on Rose. Now, you know, when we did our last show too, LeBron James hadn't left Miami yet. The Heat are no more. And unless they get Kevin Love right now, the East is completely wide open. And if Carmelo Anthony had come to the Chicago Bulls, I think without a doubt right now, the Bulls would be my favorite to win the East. Because frankly, right now, today, on July 23rd, the Bulls are probably my pick to win the East. Now, we have a lot of unknowns. We have a lot of unknowns. And we got an email the other day from Larry Hughes Jr. saying that our team now could compete with the San Antonio Spurs with our depth and whatnot. And now I completely disagree with that. We are much deeper on paper than we were last year. But the fact is, our depth is very unproven. What is our depth now? Our depth obviously includes Derrick Rose, who you don't know what he's going to be. Doug McDermott, who obviously had a great summer league, but it's still the summer league, but he had a really good summer league. Well beyond what you normally see from a rookie. Tony Snell, who whatever, he had a good summer league, but he wasn't that great last year. Nikolai Mirotic, unproven. There's a lot of unprovens that we are relying on to produce heavy for us to be a powerhouse. But at the same time, I do like our chances, especially with Miami now not being Miami anymore, though Miami, I think, is still going to be a pretty good team. I mean, you replace LeBron with Deng, which is ironic because considering that he kind of, in some weird way, replaced him kind of in Cleveland, not really, but kind of. But regardless of which, they maintained a decent team. Miami's still going to be pretty good. I think we're better. The Cavaliers, unless they get Kevin Love, that's not a deep team. And that's, you know, so the East is wide open. And I got to say, I mean, even though there's a lot of unprovens, I mean, I'm not going to agree with Larry Hughes Jr. here and say that we, have the depth of a team like San Antonio. I don't think we have the depth of a team yet like the LA Clippers. I mean, but we are very deep, especially down low. And I think, you know, front, especially center, is a position that is probably the weakest position in the NBA right now. Two guards and fives, I think, are the two positions that are the worst in the NBA right now. And though I don't think we have a great two guard, our front court is loaded. And the addition of Pau Gasol, now, I don't know really where Mirotić fits in here. That's my issue.
Let me jump in here really quick. Let's first start out with, in my opinion, this fact. As the teams currently stand, assuming that trade for Love doesn't go through with Cleveland, I think the Bulls are the best team in the East. I'm a lot higher on Gasol, and I'm a lot higher on McDermott than most people are. Let's start out with Gasol, number one. You know, we're lucky enough, Mark, that we, through our jobs, we met people in other areas. We know a lot of fans from the other Utah fan base, from the LA fan base. I mean, you can go back, unfortunately, we lost a lot of those episodes, but we'll probably get them back up on the Bullseye. You go back and you listen to that interview when we got Boozer, and everything Jason Randall said, a Utah rabid fan about Boozer, came to fruition. Everything he said about Boozer's game. The fan base in Utah was not a fan of Carlos Boozer. That's the exact opposite of Pau Gasol. Every person I've talked to in L.A. is a huge fan of Pau Gasol. He put up, very good numbers for a team, that he wasn't really a good fit with. He had a coach that he's not the type of player who can work with that guy. I think he is the type of player who work with Tibbs. Tibbs can take advantage of his low post game, which is excellent. There's very few people in the league with a better back-to-the-basket game than Gasol. You can throw the ball down to him, and he's going to draw a double team. He's going to be able to kick it because he's a great passer. I think the acquisition was fantastic. He's old. Yes, he is. He's getting older, right? I mean, but for the amount of money he spent, which was $7 million basically a year, just between $7 and $8 million for 3 years, that's not a bad contract at all for a player who really still is, in my opinion, all-star caliber. So you do have the best front court with Taj, Gasol, and Noah. Those three is the best front court rotation in the NBA, in my opinion, without a doubt, number one. So great move in signing Gasol. Number two, people are forgetting. So Gasol, number two, is going to be essential for the transition that Mirotić has to make. Unfortunately, Tibbs is not the most Mr. Rogers type of coach. He's not a friendly guy. Rookies have had a hard time under him earning playing time. It's true. Mirotić should be able to make a quicker transition because he's played at a high level in Europe, unlike other players. But that said, he doesn't know the language.
Number one, Gasol's help with that. He's much more comfortable speaking Spanish. Gasol can help him there. Gasol's an excellent teammate. From what everybody I've talked to, top-notch guy in the locker room. It's just a great signing to help Mirotić come along. I don't expect Mirotić to make any contributions until the second half of the season. I've watched a lot of tape on him defensively.
But even so, where though, Fred? That's my problem. You have Noah, you have Taj, and then Pau Gasol theoretically is going to be taking the backup minutes of the two of them. Mirotić doesn't look to be a three. He's a four.
He's a four, but Mirotić can't play the five. Number one, Gasol's a 4-5. He can play the five.
Yeah.
So is Noah. Noah's a 4-5. So those two guys will split the minutes, and then Taj and Mirotić will split the minutes there. Taj, for whatever reason, never seems to ever play more than, like, 32, 33 minutes per game. There's going to be plenty of minutes to go around, Mark. I think this problem's going to work itself out. Also,
but
you're forgetting
really,
that.
Though? Because
yes, because
just consider
all these...
last year. Consider if you had Gasol last year and it wasn't Boozer. Say you had a guy that was a 4-5 last year instead of a guy that was just a pure 4 that had crazy defensive lapses. If you had Gasol last year, there was more than enough minutes to go around in the front court between those three guys. So now it's like you expect Noah to play for at least 30, right? I mean, obviously. You probably expect Gibson to play 30. So, Gasol's going to want 25 minutes at least. He deserves it. I mean, so at that point, you're taking up the backup minutes of the two of those players. Where does Mirotić fit?
Well, you think between the four position and the five position, there's 48 minutes per game, 96 minutes you have to split among those two positions. I think you could figure it out. I'd probably go 30-30 for the top three. Yeah, maybe not. But another thing you forget, Mark, these guys have huge injury histories. Taj is always injured. He got injured at the end of last season. He got injured the year before, missed the playoffs. Taj has an injury history, and so does Noah. To act like they're all going to play 82 games again, I think
So is Gasol.
I think it's a little ridiculous. You're going to need that, and I think it'll take care of itself. I don't think Mirotić is going to see a ton of play early on. I think it's going to be more 30-30-30 with maybe 6 minutes to Mirotić. But then maybe that will be divided, less evenly, and give a few more minutes to Noah, a few less to Gasol. I don't know how it's going to end up. That's up to Tibbs to figure it out. I'm hoping Mirotić can actually give us some minutes at the three, actually, against some weaker threes. We'll see. We'll figure it out. I don't think it's that big of an issue, and I think we'll solve itself with injuries as we go throughout the season. You got to expect we're going to have injuries. And, look how deep we were with Omer. And back in 2010 and 11, we had Omer, Taj, Noah. We had Big Sexy. I mean, come on. That was we went four deep, and it was never an issue. Omer got hurt in the playoffs. I mean, that stuff, it takes care of itself.
Well, wait a minute, though. Because the only player that was backing up was Omer. I'm sorry. Omer was a clear center, and Taj was your backup four. And Boozer was not the type of player that you were playing these mad minutes anyway because, whatever, he's playing, though that season he played about 32, I think, a game. Omer was clearly the reserve on this team. And unless Mirotić is playing, big, sexy type minutes, which I don't think you're paying Mirotić too much to be that. You're paying him $6 million. Are you paying him like $6 million a year? Isn't he making $18 million over 3 years? So he's making like $6 million a year. That's the same money you're paying Pau Gasol. That's almost what you're paying Taj Gibson. You didn't pay him that money to come over here and not play.
I think in year one you did. I don't think it's fair to expect a 23-year-old to come over from Europe and start playing major minutes. I just don't. And not only that, I don't think he'll get him. I don't think Tibbs will give it to him because he's not going to be good enough defensively. Tibbs is not going to play a guy who can't play defense. And right now he can't play a lick of defense. He's got to learn that. And then he'll start playing. But I think it's going to be a three-man rotation for, at least until January. Nothing wrong with that, man. It's the best three-man rotation in the league. And if somebody gets hurt, well, then Mirotić starts getting minutes.
It is. You're right, it is. But I do think that if Mirotić – because Mirotić kind of called the shots here, which I didn't particularly appreciate. It was like, okay, he was ready to leave, so now you have to sign him. But it's like I don't necessarily know if we would have been as aggressive with Pau Gasol – had we have known that Nikolai Mirotić was coming here, because our backcourt is still thin. And you don't really have a great two-guard. You had other players out there that potentially you could have thought of as, for your wing, that I think would have been a better fit.
But who?
Well, I'll give you a couple examples. How about, you're going to laugh.
If you're going to say Aaron Afalo,
he wasn't on the board at that point. How about, Eric Bledsoe, who right now, he's in very good – good player.
He's more of a
very
point
good
guard,
year last
isn't he?
Year.
I mean, he's more of a tweener.
But he could be, but that's fine. We could use a two guard. You know, he's a tweener. I mean, he's a combo guard. He could play back up to Rose and then be that two guard spot. Because, I mean, you just signed two guys to back up Rose who were vastly inferior to that. What if you know, guy like Trevor Ariza? What if Lance Stevenson? Guys that are more that wing type, 2-3 type guy, where we don't have that depth, as opposed to Nikolai Mirotic coming here, who is clearly a four, where Gasol's a 4-5. You know, none of our guys, none of our bigs can play the three. We're still thin in that backcourt. And you're right. I love the fact that we have insurance against injuries. Obviously, who doesn't? But no, every team is in the spot where if major players get injured, you're screwed. I mean, most teams are like that. So every team is. Every team is. The only team that's not, even San Antonio. San Antonio's got a really deep backcourt where something happened, you know, like Patty Mills just got injured. I'm sure they'll be fine. But their frontcourt's not that deep. So if, you know, Tim Duncan got injured or something, they're screwed. The Bulls are kind of like that in the backcourt now. And it's like we're so deep down low, but we don't have that depth in the backcourt. And I'm still concerned. I'm still concerned with their offense.
For the last few years, Mark, Nate Robinson, DJ Augustine, I think Brooks will fall right into that line of guys that we've been able to give us offense on the sheet from the backcourt. And I think not.
But he's a point guard.
Oh, that are in our front court. No, he's been, Brooks is more of a shoot. He's more of a shoot first point guard. More of a, to me, he's more of a, he's more of a scoring type. Mark, he averaged 19 points, you know, not that long ago for the Houston Rockets. I mean, he's more of a shoot first. You know, I don't think it's, I want to get wrapped up in the terminology. You got Heinrich on the squad. He can guard twos. I think our backcourt will be a lot less of a problem than people anticipate. I mean, I'm a lot higher than McDermott, so that's why I think I don't feel it's an issue. I think McDermott is already ready to play 30, 35 minutes a game. And if that's true, he's, to me, clear three. He's not a stretch four. You still there? Did I lose you?
Yeah. No, you're right. And you know what? I haven't really thought about the fact that we still have Mike Dunleavy on this team.
Mike Dunleavy.
I mean,
yeah.
We don't necessarily have guys. That's the problem, is that we don't know yet about Mirotić. He did phenomenal in summer league, and if he can create his own shot, which is do I think that he's just a spot up shooter? No. Is he a pick and pop guy? No. But is he somebody that against quicker defenders, longer defenders, bigger defenders, somebody that's going to be able to move around them and create his own shot? That we don't know. And the problem is that it looks now like we have dramatically improved our 3-point shooting on paper. Snell looks to be better, and then Doug McDermott. But you know, let's say that Brooks is a wash with DJ Augustine. Let's just say that he's a wash. If that's the case, it is Doug McDermott. Is Doug McDermott gonna be the guy that we need him to be? Because you don't want Mike Dunleavy starting this year. You need a clear starting three. Is that guy gonna be McDermott? And then if that is the case, is Butler gonna be able to be at least good enough offensively? Where then, okay, fine, you have Dunleavy coming off the bench. But he's at 2-3. It's a problem. You just don't have guys that create their own shots. It's got to be Doug McDermott. If it's not him, who's it going to be Derrick Rose?
Here's exactly what I think they should do at the 2 and the 3. There's three guys. There's Dunleavy. There's Butler. And there's McDermott. You should divide those 96 minutes. There's 48 minutes for the shooting guard, 48 minutes for small forward, 96 total. Divide those three evenly. Each guy averages, you know, just over 30 minutes a game. That's exactly how you do it. And you have plenty of shooting in McDermott. Yeah, but McDermott's a four-year. I mean, it's not like he's played against. He's going to play against USA Basketball again. People were raving about him last year when he did that. He still played at Creighton, but he played very good at Creighton. And he, you know, he averaged 26 points a game. If you don't believe in Doug McDermott, you'll think there's a problem. If you do, it's not really a problem. In fact, I think we're going to look really good. I thought Dunleavy played solid for us last year. I think he'll do good if he averages about 30 minutes a game. Like I said, Butler, you got to get Butler's minutes down. I don't mind him at 30. I mind him at 40. At 30, I don't have a problem. Like I said, there's 96.
I mind anyone at 40. Don't think Dunleavy is a starter in this league anymore. He is on a shitty team.
We haven't even talked about Tony Snell. You know, Tony Snell, if he improves and he could earn 10, 15 minutes a game, there's no issues at the 2 and the 3. You know, I keep on hearing it. We need another perimeter player. And I understand it. I understand the concern. It sure would have been nice to get Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza went, for $8 million a year? I don't know about that. I mean, the guy had one really good year last year. And the 3 years before that, he was a huge disappointment. I am not. I don't think I would have been happy with a 4-year, $8 million per year deal for Trevor Ariza.
But could you have gone after one of those restricted free agents, like a Chandler Parsons, like a Eric Bledsoe, and offered big enough money? We had about $10 million in cap space, offered big enough money that would have deterred those other teams from trying to get them.
Well, that's what the question is. If you think the delta on Chandler Parsons and Doug McDermott is going to be huge, then you're going to regret that we didn't go after him. I don't. I really believe in this kid.
That that's the question, though, because McDermott you drafted. I do think, though, that guys that are more of two, like a guy like Bledsoe, a guy that's still not signed, even a guy like Stevenson, who's a pure two, who can play the two, who can play the three, they can swing at those two positions, but they can, to some degree, create their own shot, especially Bledsoe.
But, Mark, you cannot pay – you owe Derrick Rose over $60 million over the next 3 years. His natural position is point guard. You cannot pay another point guard. And Bledsoe's natural position is point guard.
Combo guard, though, but
you
he
cannot,
is a combo guard.
He is a combo, but you can't have – he's not big enough to guard twos consistently.
But, hey, who's your favorite shooting guard since Michael Jordan on the Bulls?
Ben Gordon, I agree with you, and I know we're going to go here, but I
– Bledsoe's better.
No, not – maybe – I don't want to get into
this
argument.
Come on, man.
Hey, did he average 20 points – did he average 20 points a game for a playoff team twice? When he does it twice, then let's say he was better than Ben Gordon.
He averaged 20 points a game for a playoff team in the West. In the West, he was the best or second best, arguably, on the Phoenix Suns. Clearly one of the top two players on that team. They made the playoffs in the West.
Good for 1 year.
And it was their backcourt that made that playoffs, man. Their frontcourt was okay.
Very good for 1 year. Mark, you cannot pay Bledsoe and Rose half your salary cap. Can't do it. Can't do it. You got to invest that money elsewhere. I am completely fine with this roster. In fact, I love it because I think it forces
I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it.
And not only that, Heinrich can give you minutes at the two. Unfortunately, that's my nightmare. That's my nightmare is that the fact this guy's on the roster again is that Tibbs is going to force him down our throat and he's going to be closing games. And that's an issue. That's an issue. I don't know. It's a nightmare.
Is it ever
going to
end?
Going
Are we just
going to
keep playing for Heinrich until he's like 45 years old? I mean, at this point, come on.
How do people feel that? And then after when they sign him, Tibbs goes, well, he saved our season. I'm like, that's the exact same thing he said about DJ when we got him. How can people say after watching DJ and Kirk last year that Kirk had a better year than DJ Augustine? I mean, literally, there are two guys that Kirk Heinrich should pay half of his salary to. Nate Robinson. And he should pay half of it to DJ Augustine. Because if those two guys didn't end up on the roster, team would have had about 10 less wins, and we would be all over Kirk Heinrich and his 39% shooting percentage.
For sure, and I could handle, though I didn't want to let Nate Robinson go, the fact was Kirk was under contract. This year he wasn't. So the fact that we re-signed Kirk Heinrich this year, we didn't even attempt to get DJ Augustine. Now, DJ got a nice deal for, well, I mean, comparatively. I don't know what Kirk's getting. I'm under the impression
he's got $2.7 million.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's what DJ got $3 million.
He got a little bit over it, yeah. He got $300,000.
Good God. You're absolutely right. I mean, DJ
it's appalling.
Outplayed the hell out of him. He outplayed the hell out of him last year, and it's starting to get ridiculous that on every single one of the teams that Kirk Heinrich plays on, whether it's for Thibodeau, whether it's for Vinny Del Negro, whether it's for Bill Cartwright, he gets – dramatically overrated every single time.
Yeah.
Scott Skiles. It's like he saved our season. No, not from what I saw. It was Joakim Noah. It was DJ Augustine. I mean, I didn't see Kirk Heinrich stepping up big time when Luol Deng went down. It was really DJ. DJ. You brought a DJ and the season got saved. This team was terrible until we got DJ.
My nightmare is that Tibbs is going to close important games, playoff games, with Heinrich at the two and Butler at the three instead of the McDermott at the three and Butler at the two. He's going to side for the defense, and we're going to have struggle in the score, not going to be able to spread the floor. I just see it happening just like it did last year. Look what he did last year. He finished out those games where Heinrich was out there just sucking beyond belief down the stretch in key important games. And
he's great when it doesn't matter. And he's not even,
he's not even great when it doesn't matter. Mark, he shot 39% last year.
Yes, that's not good. You're absolutely right. I mean, but he shoots too much. He's still, for somebody that shoots 39%, he's taking 8, 9, 10 shots a game. That's when you're playing the minutes that he plays, that's a lot. And that's
I disagree on that. I think his teammates love him because there's no guy more eager to pass than Kirk Heinrich. That's all he lives for. He passes up more wide open good shots than anybody I've ever seen in the league.
And that's because he has no confidence in his shot. I don't have any confidence in his shot. I don't know anybody who should have confidence in his shot. But when he does finally take a shot, it's usually when there's not a defender, you know, 7 or 8 feet within around him. You know, he'll shoot it up, and he shoots at a 39% rate. And that gets to the heart of why people, you know, ask me why I can't stand Kirk Heinrich. He doesn't shoot the basketball well enough. For his skill set, you have to be a consistent 44-41 metric type of shooter, which is what he did do in 2006 and 7. He did, and at certain points of his career with the Bulls, he approached those numbers. That's why he got his big, fat contract. And after that 07 playoffs, or actually break, after the 07 regular season, he had a horrific playoffs, and he continued it. Just a completely inconsistent, horrible shooting for the vast majority of his career in the NBA. And, I mean, for his metrics, I mean, 39% and with what he shoot, like 33, 34, 35 from three last year, that's horrific. That's horrible for a guy who doesn't do anything but shoot wide-open jumpers. You there?
I agree with you 100%, Brett.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's at the heart of it, why I can't stand a guy. And he's not
– But we keep using him. I mean, when you're paying somebody what we're paying him, you know, you're not paying that guy to be, you know, dead end of the bench. And at this point in his career – I do feel that's kind of what he is. I mean, he's unreliable. He had a stretch last year where he played well, but it was a stretch where it didn't matter as much. When the playoffs came around, he wasn't so good anymore. And he wasn't even that great when he was, you know, went through that streak where he was playing all right on a consistent basis. And you're absolutely right that he would have done nothing if it wasn't for DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
And again, it comes back to the fact when Dang left this team was completely lost. It was when DJ came here. So you could talk about point guard skills because everybody knocked Nate Robinson because he wasn't a good enough point guard, quote unquote. Well, DJ got this team under wraps. And, I mean, DJ was the reason that this – it's when DJ came, this team was winning again. Before DJ came, this was one of the worst teams in basketball. They looked like they were going to be a top-tier lottery team. I mean, they were in the running for Andrew Wiggins. So there was a period where they were that bad. And people forget that because they ended up getting the 4 seed in the ridiculously terrible East. Kirk Heinrich's time has come and gone. How many years did he sign for?
I think it was just a 1 year deal. I could be wrong on that.
But he'll be back again next year.
Yeah, he
you
will,
know
I'm
he
sure.
Is.
Just, but you know what, Mark? I'm not going to let it bother me because, you know, I'm hoping
Freddy
that if,
Krueger,
Rose,
man.
If Rose is healthy, I'm fine with Heinrich backing him up as long as he plays 15 minutes. And
you
I want Brooks.
Jameer Nelson.
Yeah.
Or Brooks. Brooks, you know
well,
Brooks
DJ,
is going to play.
I think Brooks is going to earn his playing time. I think he's going to get playing time because I think he's going to serve as that role of a guy who's going to score for us off the bench, and that's something just Heinrich can't do. So I kind of see maybe
but
even
I don't think
playing
he'll get in the rotation behind Rose. That's the problem, is that if Rose is healthy, then I don't think he's going to get in the rotation. The reason that you were able to get, you know, Augustine playing last year is because, well, obviously you didn't even have him before Rose went down, but the fact is now you're as deep at that position as you were when, you know, if you look at the way we were, say Rose never got injured, and if we had brought in DJ Augustine, we're as deep in that backcourt now like that in terms, you know, you have 2 point guards in that backcourt. And I just don't see, I don't see where Aaron Brooks is really going to fit in. He signed for next to nothing. And I think that, you know, when you're looking at who's going to play those minutes right now, I think Heinrich's going to play the majority of your backup 2 and point guard minutes. I mean, I think I see Heinrich playing 25 minutes a game. Ugh, and if Rose is playing 32 minutes a game, which you would assume that he is, then I just don't see where Brooks fits in. He's going to be like John Lucas III.
I'm not going to let it bring me down, Mark. I mean, I'm so excited about this team. To me, this is the best team we've had since 2010 and 11. If Rose is anywhere near 90% of what he was, I firmly believe if we stay healthy, I really believe this, I think we have the ability to win a title.
This team, if
I think
Rose
that,
is healthy,
that Paul,
is
Gasol
definitely
is that good.
Better. Than 22. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, look, what was our depth that year? What made us so good in 2010? It was Omer Asik. Omer Asik was really the difference maker, in my opinion. Because beyond that, I mean, it was Ronnie Brewer, who's good, but I mean, it was Brewer.
Kyle Korver. I mean, what are you talking about? It was a fantastic.
I'm sorry. You're right. Kyle Korver was awesome. So Kyle Korver. I mean, C.J. Watson. I mean, he was decent. I mean,
he was amazing. He was a great backup. We had a very deep team. We had arguably the deepest team in the league.
But if these guys work out, I think that their ceiling is far higher. Paul Gasol is infinitely better than Omer Asik. Infinitely better. And the fact that you've got Miricic and the fact that you've got Doug McDermott can feasibly be better than Kyle Korver. Now, Kyle Korver had a great year that year. I'm not going to put it on him right away, but the fact is that skill-wise, I think if you look at the history of Creighton, Creighton would say that Doug McDermott was better for Creighton than Kyle Korver was. So coming into the league, I mean, you could theoretically say that McDermott could be, you know, that 45-plus three-point shooter, you know, that type of player. If he is, we're way better at the starting. I'd way rather have Jimmy Butler starting at two guard than Keith Bogans.
You have,
didn't really have a backup, have, too. It was Brewer, who couldn't play. I mean, a Brewer who couldn't shoot. I mean, the combo of players that we have this year, the ceiling, they haven't played a game yet. The ceiling is higher than that team's ceiling was. But there are a lot of what ifs.
I think definitely offensively. Not defensively, but offensively it is, and that's why I think we have a better chance. I think you have a guy who demands a double team finally next to Rose. I think you have a guy who demands a double team finally next to Rose and Gasol. When you throw the ball into the post, you're going to need to send somebody to help, or he will kill you and score on you every time. And whoever helps, if Tibbs plays it right, you're going to have options there to destroy that team from three. You're really kind of creating a Spurs East. You got McDermott who can hit the three. You got Mirotić who can hit the three. You got options of guys that can spread out the court and keep those lanes open for Rose to drive and work his magic too. And not only that, you have Taj Gibson with another good post-up game. So I can see moments where you have Saul and Gibson playing together, and then whoever is the weaker post defender, they'll take that guy into the post and do their magic. Because I think Gibson's a very good post player too now. He's developed a really nice post game. So you're going to have legitimate options for this team to score that you never had before. Never. So I'm more than excited. And I don't see anybody in Cleveland being able to handle the passing ability of the front court with Noah and Gibson. And maybe not Gibson as much as Gasol. Gasol and Noah are A-plus passers for their positions. So it's just – it's phenomenal. I'm so excited to see what we can do with this team. You know, it's up to –
Let me ask you three questions.
He's got the tools.
Today, yes or no, are the Chicago Bulls the best team in the Eastern Conference?
Yes.
Number two, if the Cleveland Cavaliers get Kevin Love, are the Chicago Bulls the best team in the Eastern Conference?
No.
Number three.
Close second.
And this is where I think we have to have discussions. You're hearing today the trade talks of Taj Gibson, Nikolai Mirotić, and Doug McDermott for Kevin Love.
Yeah. Finally, we get to this.
A, is that better than what Cleveland is offering right now? First of all, should Cleveland Cavaliers trade Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love?
All right, let's start with this. I think, personally, that's a better lineup. I mean, I think it's a better offer.
What we're offering.
You know, again, I'm a huge believer. What we're offering is better because I'm a huge guy. I'm a huge McDermott guy. But I don't think, without a doubt, it's a better win-now lineup. And that's apparently what is really big, you know, for Minnesota. They want a team that can at least compete this year. And you're not going to get by getting Wiggins. I mean, Wiggins can hardly compete in Kansas.
Yeah, but
Wiggins is so far away from being polished as a player. I mean, I've watched a ton of his games. He can't take the ball to the left. He's very unsure with the left hand. He's a very right-handed centric player. I think he's going to be dominated off that. I think he's going to every basket he'll have will be, you know, due to his athleticism coming off the basket, you know, maybe open court, maybe dunking. You know, with LeBron, he'll find looks, but it's all going to be at the basket. I think if you went one-on-one on him, he'd have a very difficult time. Very raw player right now. Hugely talented, incredible athlete. I mean, just incredible athlete. I mean, so I'm not saying I don't think he could, you know, his ceiling is just huge if he really works on his game. And you know, I think he's got definitely – there's no argument. He's got more ability to be better than McDermott. He's never going to be a better shooter.
But it's not about McDermott, though. I think it's more about Mirotić.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think McDermott's going to be better than Mirotić. I like Mirotić's offensive game. I think defensively I think he's going to struggle. So is McDermott. I think Mirotić, you know, capping out is going to be a stretch four. I think he's going to be a good player if he caps out, but he's not going to be an all-star. I actually believe that McDermott has the ability to contend for an all-star spot.
Yeah, but McDermott was 10 picks below Andrew Wiggins. So if you're saying that the best player that we're trading to them is Doug McDermott, why would you not take Wiggins, who was 10 picks higher?
I believe right now McDermott's more ready to play in the NBA than Wiggins. Not on the defensive end. Wiggins is a defensive stud. There's no denying that. So I guess it's, overall it's probably a wash. But then you're forgetting Taj. Taj is on a great contract. He's basically making $8 million for the next 3 years.
Yeah, does Minnesota make the playoffs? If they traded Love,
No.
If they traded Love, they wouldn't make the playoffs, no. And I agree with that.
Not in the West. Not good
enough. If they didn't make the playoffs with Kevin Love, if you lose Kevin Love and you get Taj Gibson, Nikolai Mirotic, and Duncan McDermott, you still don't make the playoffs.
But I'd be more excited. If I was a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, I would be personally more excited about McDermott, Mirotic, and Taj than I would be about Wiggins and the biggest bust arguably in history, the NBA. You know.
But at least with Wiggins, you have the chance to have a superstar.
Down the road.
I don't think you have the chance. Whereas I don't think with what we're offering, you necessarily have that chance. If this team was good enough, if Minnesota was good enough, could the pieces that we're giving them be the pieces that could help them solidify a good rotation? Yeah, but that rotation's not good enough anyway. So you're paying Taj Gibson decent money. If let's say that team is incrementally – if you get Wiggins, you're going to suck next year, so you'll get a top draft pick again next year, which is actually something that's relatively desirable as opposed to trading for three players that are all, say, relatively decent that are going to make you a 35-36 win team where you're not going to be a top three-seeded team in the lottery. Not that you want to play for the lottery, but you don't want to play for 35 wins either. I don't see how you don't take Wiggins. I don't see how you don't take Wiggins. Because I don't see where Taj is really an asset.
Personally, do I? Just don't, I think he's so good offensively. I think that team will be horrific next year. I mean, I think if they got the Bulls, I think they would probably if they took the Bulls offer, they'd probably have 10 to 15 more wins than if they took the Cavs offer. Now down the road, Wiggins has the opportunity to be an elite player. There's a lot of question marks on that though too. I don't think he's going to ever be elite offensively. I'm willing to say that right now from what I've seen. He has far too many holes in his offensive game to be what I would call an elite player on the offensive end. Defensively, no doubt, he's going to be great. And athletically, I mean, there's very few people can touch him. But, I mean, I would be more excited about seeing a guy like McDermott who's going to just score. You know, I think he's going to put up, as a rookie, if he's given the time in Minnesota, he's going to have some incredible nights shooting the basketball. And have a guy like Taj, who's a great athlete, blocking shots. But we haven't even really talked about what the most important thing is, Mark. Would you do the deal if you're the Bulls?
That's what I was going to say next. So obviously you and me differ in terms of if I was Flip Saunders, what would I do? I would take the Wiggins deal. You would take the Bulls deal. But would I do the deal if I'm the Bulls? I would do it in a heartbeat. Kevin Love, first of all, we are, like I've said, in my opinion, almost, I don't want to say too deep because I guess there's no such thing as too deep, but there's so much depth at the four spot right now that if you trade Mirotic and you trade Taj Gibson, it almost is a wash because you're going to have Kevin Love who's going to take up all those minutes and you still got Pau Gasol and Joakim Noah down there. The three of them together are more than enough for your front court. And I mean, Kevin Love is significantly better than anybody else that's on this team. With Mirotic, the best you're hoping for if the gods come together and the lights shine down and holy hallelujah, the father of the Lord, the best you could hope for is that Mirotic is Kevin Love. In the God honest truth, the possibility of that happening is probably 10%. So, you know, to that degree, Love is substantially better than Taj Gibson and Nikolai Mirotic combined. It's then you're talking about Doug McDermott, who for our team is a very valuable player, but at the same time, Kevin Love, I mean, he spreads the floor too. He's a stretch four. He's, in my opinion, Kevin Love is a top five player in this game. Those type of players don't come around often. You could get another Doug McDermott if you needed to. You could get another, I mean, that's what you're going to need. You kind of have that to a degree in Mike Dunleavy, poor man's, I mean, from what we think McDermott's going to hopefully be. Some people are probably, I mean, whatever. You've got a shooter in Mike Dunleavy where I still think you have enough depth on this team to be you're going to be better, I think. With Kevin Love, regardless, you're still going to be better. You won't have the depth that you're going to have this year, but you're going to have that superstar that is good enough where you're still going to have depth, and you're going to have three great players starting. You're going to have three players. You're going to have who a lot of people thought was the best center in the league last year, and Joakim Noah. Maybe, you know, I mean, you can still say Dwight Howard, fine, but Dwight Howard wasn't number one, you know, first team center NBA. That was Joakim Noah. You'd have, in my opinion, the best power forward in the league in Kevin Love. And then, God willing, Derrick Rose comes back and he's anything like what he was before. If Derrick Rose is a top five power forward in the league, your front court's the best front court in the league, hands freaking down. If you get Kevin Love, you have some room with Derrick Rose at that point. He's that good. I would do the deal in a heartbeat.
I think it's a little closer than you let on. I mean, I think Taj is so integral to our defense. He's a fantastic rebounder, fantastic defender, and he's, you know, developed into a pretty good offensive player, frankly. You know, but there's no doubt Kevin Love is, he's a 26, you know, 12 guy. I mean, that kind of guy is elite. And just comparing him up with Noah, He's a fantastic passer, a great rebounder. You know, getting him with Noah, Gasol, Rose, I would do it. I would do it because then you have a team that I think can literally, you know, that's the best. And not only that, the thing that
keeps them out of Cleveland,
it prevents Cleveland from getting them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean,
which is the only
you clearly
question
are
mark.
The best team. Yeah, which
yes.
is the only team I think that could challenge us.
Yes.
So I would do it for that reason, is I think it gives us the edge to win the East.
A tremendous edge. If they don't get,
you know,
Cleveland
compete
doesn't
for a title.
Get Kevin Love, if Cleveland doesn't get Kevin Love, I don't think they are anywhere near. And I apologize for there's just a little bit of cutting out here, so sometimes I think you're done with your point, and I then hear that you're still talking, so I apologize. But we're gonna get that fixed before the next show. But.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Cavaliers, as constructed right now, have tremendous, tremendous holes. There is no powerhouse in the East right now. There is the Miami Heat are done. There is nobody that comes – LeBron James on Cleveland right now. I think the Cleveland Cavaliers will eventually be much better than they were, you know, a handful – you know, 4 years ago when LeBron James played for the Cavaliers because LeBron left. So obviously you have a lot of assets that they did not have the ability to get back then. But they have to round out that team. And they got Mike Miller. I mean, I like Mike Miller. The offseason is not over if they don't get Kevin Love. And you could tell they're putting their eggs in one basket right here. They want to get Kevin Love. If they don't get Kevin Love, I'm sure they're going to do things to round out that team. But you do have redundancy with Wiggins and James, so I'm sure that you could put Wiggins at the two spot if you need to. And James is such a versatile player, it doesn't matter anyway. But their front court's not good at all. The Cavaliers have tremendous, tremendous, tremendous holes. But they get Kevin Love. I'm picking them to win the East. Hence, we get Kevin Love. They have no chance. They have no chance. Nobody can touch us. Nobody can touch
us.
I
agree.
To get Kevin Love.
And that's why I do it. I love McDermott. You know, I think he's going to be a really good player. But, you know, Kevin Love is already an all-star. He's already that guy. You know, I don't – his ceiling – I would do it. I would absolutely do it. And I think, you know, if we do get Kevin Love, I think the sky's the limit, man. I mean, it's going to be freaking awesome. It's going to be awesome either way. That's my point. You know, I was thinking about this, and I think I tweeted it today. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't really. I think we'll be slightly better with Love, but, you know, we lose a little bit defensively with losing Taj. You know, that said, this team is rock solid. You know, even if we don't get Love, I still think we can win the East. Even if the Cavs get Love, it's going to be a lot harder, and I think they would be the favorite. But it's not out of the realm of possibility for us to beat them. Because we were that good defensively on the interior, I still think they'd have a hard time matching. You know, Love would be in foul trouble. I think they'd have a hard time matching our front court. And then the wild card is Rose against Irving, and we'd see what happened there. And I still have faith that Derek's going to be the man that he once was. You there?
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I do hope that Bulls fans at this point can put to rest the qualms that they've had with Gar Foreman and John Paxson in the past. The facts say, you know, they're not aggressive. They don't make the big moves. I feel like they always have. I feel like they've always been within the realm of discussion with major transactions. I feel like as a whole, they've done what they can with this team. I mean, you got crippled with injuries the last couple of years. All you can do is build cap space, and that's what they did. They put themselves in a position to make themselves much better this year, and I feel like they did everything they could. I mean, I think they pulled out all the stops with Carmelo Anthony. They did their best, and now you see that they're as involved as you can get with Kevin Love. And, I mean, if he doesn't come here, at the end of the day, you know, you can't control what other general managers do. You can't control what other players choose in terms of free agency. You can only choose the moves that you make, and, you know, everybody right now is picking us to be right now the team to beat in the East. And people right now, I think unanimously across the board, think that we're a title contending team. And this was a team that last year clearly was not a title contending team. So I hope, you know, I was disappointed last year with the team that we brought to the floor at the beginning of the season. I thought that even with a healthy Rose, that there was enough missing from the team that even with a healthy Rose, they weren't going to be good enough. But it was clear that what they were trying to do was clear up the cap space for this year so you could make major moves, because you can make a bunch of tiddlywink moves every single offseason if you want to and just be capped out. But it is clearing up cap space, major cap space, that allows you to make big moves like we were able to make this offseason in acquiring Pau Gasol and in signing Nikolai Mirotic to the deal we were able to sign him to. And you were aggressive at in the draft as well. So I hope that this gives our general managers a little bit of – and our owner, for that matter, a little bit of credence in the city of Chicago, something that they didn't have in the past.
I agree, brother. I think they've done a fine job overall. I mean, they've drafted guys like Noah, Taj Gibson,
Derrick Rose. I mean, guys that are really essential for us winning. And steals like, you know, Jimmy Butler with in the 30th overall pick. I think overall they've done a rock solid job. And I think they're under limitations that other general managers aren't financially. And their free agent signings, if you look at DJ Augustine, they picked up these guys, Nate Robinson, who have done tremendous jobs. And I was looking at it at their payroll today, and they have four contracts, in my opinion, that are what I would call A contracts, where the quality of the player is on a very reasonable deal, what I would call a reasonable deal. And Noah, who's making $12 million, and I think it's reasonable, you know, for how good he is right now. I think Taj Gibson making $8 million a year is a very reasonable deal. And I think a guy like, you know, Mike Dunleavy making $3 million is a great deal. And Butler. I mean, they've done a really good job.
Butler's not signed. You can't say Butler because Butler was drafted. Yeah. So he's under a rookie contract.
It's still, you know, an A-plus contract. That's what I mean. You know, I mean, they have
Pau
guys
Gasol,
there.
Too. I think Pau Gasol got a good – I mean, for what he brings, he got offered more money. He chose to come to Chicago. I mean, I think they did a good job on selling Pau Gasol. The fact of the matter is that obviously Pau Gasol believes in the vision that we presented to him. And you saw that at the end of the day, the top two teams contending for Gasol were us and the Spurs. And the Spurs won the title last year. And the Spurs have tremendous gaps in their front court, you know, in terms of depth. If Tim Duncan goes down, they're screwed, one. And Tiago Splitter's not that great. Boris Diaw's not that great. Pau Gasol would have been a tremendous upgrade for the San Antonio Spurs. If I'm Pau Gasol and I'm just looking at the Chicago Bulls or the Spurs, A, I think I fit better with the San Antonio Spurs. I think I'm going to have more minutes with the Spurs. Now, at the same time, when he signed with us, we didn't know that Miritich was coming here, but still, I think you're going to have more minutes, and I think that that's a team more primed to win, yet we sold them on that vision, and Pau Gasol obviously believes in us, and he took less money to play with us. I think that's incredible.
I agree. And I think it shows it just falls flat in the face of this is a, you know, organization that doesn't get, you know, premier free agents. Gasol to me was a premier free agent, and he signed for less money. I think it's a great move, and I'm very happy with the job they've done. Hey, man.
Second best free agent of the offseason, I'm going to say. I mean, other than, you know, guys, I mean, obviously at the end of the day, guys that switched teams, players that left their teams and switched, you know, I'm not going to consider LeBron James because at the end of the day, I don't think he gave any thought to anybody else but the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yes.
And,
yep.
You know, so to that, you know, we were in the running for Carmelo Anthony, but besides that, and we were the top team to sign Carmelo Anthony at the end of the day. We were the only real competition New York had. You saw teams like Houston go out there with cap space and, to me, a roster that had a lot less question marks, yet they were much less successful. And look at them. They lost their unrestricted free agent or their restricted free agent, Chandler Parsons, and downgraded to Trevor Ariza, and they haven't gotten anybody else. And they had all this cap space, too. We won in the offseason. I mean, we got, in my opinion, the best free agent that left their team. He's older, but he's still very good. He's a consummate professional. He is the type of player that you probably will get at least 2 good years out of, I hope. I hope that he's not the next Rip Hamilton, but he's worth the risk because you didn't have any major free agents leave their teams that were just like, whoa, my God, this is a ground shaker. It didn't happen this offseason besides LeBron James.
No, we should be excited as a fan base, and it's a very good time to be a Bulls fan, man.
So. Christ, Houston couldn't even get Chris Bosh. I thought that was a shoo-in. I'm amazed that Chris Bosh went back to Miami, considering that they lost LeBron James. If you went to Houston, potentially were a title-contending team.
Absolutely.
Miami's not. I'm amazed. The Bulls did an incredible job of keeping a team together when you saw other teams with cap space whiffed so much. This offseason. Another team that I thought big time this offseason was the Dallas Mavericks. I thought they did a great job with what they had in the offseason. They did an incredible job of making their team better.
All right, man. I got to hit the road. I need to get back to bed.
We got to work on this interconnection for next time.
I'm at a bad connection right now because I'm in bed in a very remote area. So.
Okay, I hope it's you. I'm going to test my connection.
I'm sure it's me, but please listen to it. I hope it sounds okay. And bear with us. It will be improved next time.
Sounds great, man. Hey, feel better. Get those tonsils worked up. We need you yelling and screaming.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Until next time.
Good night. Good night.